fathers and daughters. Acknowledging? How about applauding? Well, how about imitating? Some people are doing some good stuff out in San Diego, in Van Nuys. Hey, this is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, Connecting the Dots, episode number 418 of The Next Step. Let's do it.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, here we are again, but never the same. Always something new over here, and definitely today. It's a beautiful day here in Southern California. I hope it's beautiful wherever you're at right now. Just at least for the next hour, we're together. And that's kind of a beautiful thing. Thank you for joining us. Listen, I want to thank you all for those wonderful letters, the nice messages of support, those wonderful get well wishes. I appreciate it so much. It's kind of a weird process. I think we're going on about 6 weeks right now since that horrific accident, and kind of like trying to sort things out. It's really strange. I've never been through this in my life. So kind of like, thank you for walking through it with me. And I appreciate all of your comments. Also, thank you for the wonderful comments regarding the Gore CD. Yes, we did send them out. We made an offer last week. I guess we could continue it today for a donation of $25 or more to this ministry. We would send out a new copy of the Gore, well, a copy of the new Gore CD, and obviously it's new. It's in shrink wrap as well, and we will send that out to you. And just wonderful comments, people enjoying it, liking the new tunes. And yeah, they are on their way. We did get a few people say, hey, we sent in the donation right after you said it last Thursday, and where's the... it does take a while, I guess. We just found that out, too, because it's kind of a stamping issue with the United States Postal Service. I guess there's different kinds of stamps these days, as opposed to ones you stick on, as opposed to ones that they're computer-generated. And for some reason, believe it or not, the computer-generated ones are coming out a lot slower. Yeah, I was really surprised. Just crossed town. It took a while to get out there. But anyway, we are monitoring it, which tells you that it's not massive numbers of these that we're sending out, which is sad because it's some good music. Anyway, hopefully soon it'll be out in digital format and you'll be able to download it. But the Gore Passport CD still making some noise here and there, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. Hey, listen, I got a lot to share with you today. We're going to start off with going down to San Diego and some incident that happened right after we got off the air last week. And then we're going to be continuing with, let's go for the ride, okay? How about that, okay? Let's go for the ride. So last week, after we finished the podcast and put it to bed, and beyond bed, it woke up, right? Yeah, putting to bed. I guess you heard an old term from the old newspaper days. Yeah, that's what we'd do when you'd get the publication out. Oh, I used to work at a paper, and Monday night was our deadline. We'd put it out and it'd say, "Put it to bed." And I guess it meant it went to the printer, I guess, because that's the expression, and it went to printer and was out of our hands. It would now then be up to distributions to handle it. But I guess in this case, with a podcast, it's waking up from bed, right? But that would imply that we are asleep, right? Oh, just forget this metaphor, okay? Let's start brand new, okay? Last week, after we finished podcasting, I went on the net and I was cruising up and down seeing what's going on, and something hit my eye. It was one of the young girls that grew up at our church, and she was posting something about what was going on, what was happening down at UC San Diego. And apparently, an independent student newspaper was had published some harassing comments towards the Armenians, including some derogatory remarks about their looks, about different physical characteristics, including also some derogatory comments about the genocide. Derogatory in the sense that, you know, it's in this usual vein that somehow has become popular today. You know, when you look at what passes as comedy these days, what people laugh at. And you know that for the last few weeks we've been talking about that laugh track, what you're told to laugh at. Somehow today anything goes, and you can just make it in the name of comedy. Of course, you can't do this seriously, but if you want to be a comedian, you can get up and you can poke fun at just about everybody, and everybody is, you know, instinctually will laugh, that nervous laugh a lot of times too. But are there points where you cross the line? And certainly this has been challenged. And this goes back to the time of George Carlin, when he first started coming out with some things that really challenged the senses of people, and followed up by the likes of, there's been several. Let me not get into all the different comedians, but you know that there's been different comedians, and some of them have gotten just really rude. You look at people like Don Rickles, who was just looking at people and just basically calling them an ass, and, you know, everybody would just laugh at it. You look at somebody like a Howard Stern. I mean, what is there redeeming about any of this? And we call them comedians, we call them entertainers. What is the redeeming value of any of these things? Do they need redeeming value? Are they just here to entertain us, and is entertainment just at the expense of somebody else? Right? And you know what I'm... Joan Rivers, there's another one too, right? And it just this brassy and these comments about this and that, and about personal hygiene, about you know, the gamut of things, okay? And now they were attacking the Armenians and coming up with these points. And I won't go into them, but I will definitely have something on the show notes so you could check it out and read it in its nuances. But what had happened was that this newspaper down in San Diego had done this in the name of, I guess, freedom of speech. Is that what it's called? And they were caught on it. They were caught on it by a group of Armenians. And now let me tell you why this is really, really important, because it's not just about the genocide, but how do genocides start? In other words, what is the first step? You know, it's not just all of a sudden that somebody says, okay, let's go kill off a group of people. They start gradually. And one of the first steps is this derogatory talk towards them, where you dehumanize the individuals. And I'll never forget our dear friends from Rwanda, when we were coming, when they had come here and they were staying with us. One night we went out on a walk, and we were walking through the neighborhood, and there we came upon cockroaches that were on the floor. And I'll never forget how incensed they were by the sight of this. And they went on to explain to us that what had happened during the genocide was that there was this labeling of one group as cockroaches. And you think about it for a moment, what is the word that is used during genocide? Extermination. Right? Even the quotes are exterminating a group of people. Well, why? Because you don't exterminate people. You exterminate pests. You exterminate rodents. You exterminate roaches, right? These are the things that need to be... It's legitimate, right? You call an exterminator to come and exterminate those things that don't belong there. So one of the first steps, yeah, start dehumanizing. Start calling them names. Start referring to them in terms that they can be an object of extermination. They are pests, right? Okay, yeah, you get rid of pests. They are cockroaches. You exterminate cockroaches. And this is, I mean, look at it. This is the 8 stages of genocide. Let me see, maybe make a note and we'll put that on our show notes as well today. Okay, check it out. The stages of genocide. In other words, it just doesn't happen all of a sudden that somebody rises and says, let's eliminate a population, but it begins by gradual steps. And so all of a sudden we see this kind of hatred, this kind of hate talk being printed in this newspaper, and guess what? They got caught on it. Yeah, it's we know it exists. It's all over the place. But at what point? At what point do you stand up and say, "I'm sorry, this is unacceptable"? Well, at the point where money is exchanged, right? And apparently, the University of San Diego, University of California, San Diego, had been funding this newspaper, and they had stopped funding. And so the newspaper goes after the university and says, hey, this is free speech. This is free speech. You can't defund us. And that's where a group of these Armenians got together and said, yes, they can. They need to defund you. They need to stop. You don't belong. You don't belong here. And that takes a lot of courage. That takes a lot of courage. I have to tell you, I was so proud of this group. Because we were sitting at dinner that night. I had read about this last Thursday, right after we finished the podcast. And I had seen what this young girl, her name is Yeras, she had written on her Facebook page, and it caught my attention, and I was following it along. So the next night, we were out to dinner, and the people we were with bring this up as a conversation. They said, did you see what was going on at the university down in San Diego? And the gentleman said, you've got to read what these Armenians have written in rebuttal to this, incident, and in reaction to what's going on over there. And, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, but it happens a little too much to me. People shove their smartphone right in my face. You know, so he's got the article on his smartphone and he shoves it in my face. And this could happen with pictures. This could happen with all kinds of things. This is like the new gesture of choice, I guess, right? Here, look, immediately. Anyway, so he gives me this article and I'm reading it, and a very, very well written. I've got to tell you, I was so impressed by it. And as I'm reading it, I'm saying, I wonder, you know, if Yeras was involved in this, if she got involved. And I get down to the bottom of it, and I see that she has penned the article. She had penned the response to this group. And it was just so, it's just beautifully done. It was so professional. You know how things get on the internet, right? You, SOB, you know, people start calling people names and everything. This had none of that. It was just so professionally done. You just felt good reading it. It was articulate. It wasn't hiding behind words. It was expressive. It was argumentative. It took on concepts and gave logical rebuttals to those concepts. It was just beautifully done. I was so, so impressed, actually, to the point that I was really moved to tears. To understand that there is a new generation coming about that is concerned about items that have global impact. And this global awareness of incidents that are happening all around us, to be able to take, not just feeling obliged, hey, I'm Armenian, I gotta do it, but feeling the responsibility that I'm a human being, I'm on this planet Earth. I'm a human being and I have a responsibility to answer. Not just sit back. Not just be the laugh track in some kind of a sitcom. My life is not a sitcom. It's not a 24/7 sitcom where, you know, I'm going to laugh and say, hey, this is fun and everything like that. And okay, yeah, we made fun of Armenians today. Tomorrow it'll be the Mexicans. Next day it'll be the Turks. Next day it'll be the Russians. So what? You know, let's get with it. We all have to loosen up. No. That you can't start talking this kind of trash talk Yes, it is trash talk because you're talking about killing. You're talking about desecrating what is sacred, basically human life, right? To me, that's the ultimate trash, right? And here was a group of people, especially young students, who were standing up at the right time and saying, this is unacceptable. I applaud them. And that night, I got to tell you, I got on my computer. I drafted a small little note to her. And I sent it off, just expressing my pride, feeling proud to know someone like her that she had put that together. And in the morning, I received a response from her. And I do want to share it with you, our Next Step listeners, because, well, you've been involved in this process. You've been with us through the years, and you know how important these things are. I feel like this is also directed to all of you as well. Because what she wrote to me in the morning kind of came at the right time, too, because as I'm, you know, as we always do, you kind of question, like, are we reaching people? Are we touching people? Are people being, are we being heard out there? And I got a response to that question as well as to my note. And like I said, I want to share it with you because I believe you're all part of this. And she writes, even though I was too young to be truly involved with the In His Shoes youth group years ago, the work you did with World Vision and various other projects really made an impression on me in the sense that I knew once I was old enough, I wanted to do work that had purpose too. And you know what? This is it. This is what it's all about. And she kind of like, it just like hit me, a wake up for me. Like, yeah, this is really important that we keep vigilant about talking about our obligation, our responsibility collectively, individually for this hurting world. If we want peace, we have to become those instruments and those agents of peace, and we need to be able to be vigilant and stand guard. I don't care if it's popular to laugh at other people. I don't care if it makes money for you, you know. I'm sorry. There are things that are beyond even issues of taste. These are borderline hate crimes. I mean, can you imagine? Can you just imagine this same thing? And I'll put it again. It'll be on today's show notes. You can check it out. Can you imagine if somebody wrote these things about any other community? If they had written against African Americans, for instance, or if they had written it against Jewish Americans. Hey, listen to what's going on here in America. We've got a presidential candidate who called a judge, you know, called him out because he could be unfair because of his nationality, of his Mexican nationality. Forget that he was born in the United States and that he is an American citizen and he has risen on his own means to that position of being a judge, but basically calling him out for his ethnicity. These are all the beginning signs of an intolerance that drives us back to stone ages. We can't go there. We cannot go there. And it takes people to be able to call them out on it. And so, you know, you can't imagine my excitement that, you know, that I'm seeing that new groups, new younger people are involved in calling out these kinds of unjust talk, these kinds of intolerance towards other people. And we need to stay vigilant because really it is the first step. When you talk about extermination, when you talk about getting rid of people, when you talk about the wars that we see, when you talk about genocide, they all start someplace. And it's these small little incidents that happen that we need to be cognitive of. We need to be vigilant in our response towards them, and we need to be able to be constant. In other words, always be aware of them. Anyway, congratulations to them. There'll be more on our show notes today. Do check it out. We will take a break now. Listen to the song of the day. I'm going to play you another Gor Mkhitaryan number off of his new album called Passport. One of my favorites. I hope you enjoy it as well. Here's Gor Mkhitaryan. Krieg herrscht starke, hangisten ist das
Այնտեղ ուր մենք էինք մեր գալուց առաջ Նայում է ներքև ծիծաղում անհոգ Պատրաստ ենք, պատրաստ ենք և մենք Հարցեր ունի նա անհամար Թե ինչու, ինչպես և ուր է գնում Ճանապարհն այդ անհայտ նրան չի վախեցնում Օրենքն է այդպես նրա հերթն է հասնում Պահն է եկել, որ իչն ես ներքև, որտեղ վաղուց սպասում էինք քեզ, այստեղ միշտ կա մի մեծ արև, ու արևից էլ մեծ, շատ մեծ մի սև. Գիտեմ, երբ իչնես, կզարմանաս, բայց գիտեմ նաև, հաստատ գիտեմ, որ երբ աչքերդ բացես ճիչով, առաջինը կտեսնես հայացքն իմ սիրով.
Off of the Gor Mkhitaryan Passport album, a new release, brand new album, which we just premiered a couple weeks ago right here in Pasadena, one that we are very proud to lend our name to, and it is a collaborative effort within Issues, because it is talking about global issues. It is talking about issues of migration, of refugees, of violence, of domestic violence in particular, all kinds of songs on there. Ones that need to stir us up. If you didn't get a chance, listen to last week's podcast. I talked quite a bit about the album and what it really means to have this kind of music. And I'm just very excited and very honored to be able to lend our name to this project. It's called Passport by Gor Mkhitaryan. It is available as a CD right now, and probably in a few weeks it'll have its digital counterparts. This is still early release. So if you would like an early release CD, yes, CD, we still have those. We do have them. Actually, they're kind of neat because they have a cover, they have an inside, they have a disc that comes with them. Be happy to send one to you. We decided that for a donation of $25 or more to In His Shoes, be happy to send you, drop one in the mail. Otherwise, very shortly, it'll be available in digital format, and you could listen to it. Of course, you could listen to it here on The Next Step as well. But when you make a donation, it's also showing your support for this broadcast as well as all the work we do. Anyway, Gor Mkhitaryan, that is Passport, is the name of the album. Make sure you look out for it and watch for it. Those of you who did send in your donations this past week, if you haven't received it, it's shortly in the mail. It's coming as quick as we can get them out. So just look for them. Well, we're coming back from a segment that we did about people who care about things that are going on in the world. Now we'll talk about some people that don't care about anything but themselves. And namely, I'm talking about some politicians. I'm talking about career politicians. Have you ever seen those guys? They are taken out of office, because this is something relatively new here in the United States, and that's having term limits. When I say new, it's relatively new to have those kind of term limits on the lower positions. It's nothing new when it comes to the top ones. I believe it was right after President Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, won his fourth term, and then he died in office during his fourth term. I believe it was right after that that they amended the Constitution here to make it a two-term presidency. Okay, so you can only go for two terms as president, because the Republicans didn't like it. Yeah, you had a Democrat who was in office for four terms. Wow, he had been elected for four terms. He was a very famous, loved president. I guess loved, arguably. Let's say that, okay? On my side of the fence, yes, loved. My grandma, you know, my grandparents, actually, my grandfather had a picture of him on the mantle, too. And, you know, he changed things when you look at what Herbert Hoover had done in this country and the recession, the depression, the Great Depression, excuse me. And, of course, World War II, and you got Franklin Roosevelt leading the people. He was a giant of a person. So he made four terms, and right after that, they amended the Constitution so that you would only have two-term presidency. Well, what happened is there was another popular president right after that, a Republican this time, named Eisenhower. Probably could have gone another term, but sorry, termed out. And term limits kind of gained more popularity in the last, I would say, few decades because of you had so much scandal within within politics. You had the incidents that were taking place during the 60s and the 70s with Watergate, with President Nixon. You had other gates. They just sort of took on these gate formats, and each president subsequently had their issues, but so too with local politicians and local politics. And so term limits have become popular. And what was interesting for me is we just had election here in California yesterday, the primary elections, and what was very interesting for me is that the ones that were termed out, they all of a sudden have now taken on positions in other categories. Okay, so if you're out as a councilman, I will go on to become a senator. If you're out as a city or a county supervisor, you will go on to be a representative and so on. And so these become career politicians. Because what else can you do? You've gotten used to the politics. You've gotten used to going around and shaking hands with people, kissing babies for all that's worth. And all of a sudden, you've become this career politician. And now what? Well, Jesus talks about them, doesn't he? You know where I'm talking about? It's that biblical parable of the steward, of the manager, right? The guy who realizes that he's going to be out of work. And so what does he do? He goes out there and he finagles. He does some swindling. He arranges it for people to become his friends because he says, when I'm out of work, I'm too embarrassed. I'm too proud to beg. And I'm not strong enough to do any physical work. I know what I'll do is I'll go and make friends for myself so that when I get out of my job, I'll be able to have friends around me that will take me in. There it is. It's right there. It's biblical. Is Jesus telling you this story? And we're seeing that right now. These career politicians, which, you know, they probably got in. If you've seen that story, it's one of my favorites, the Jimmy Stewart story, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You know, they all come in with very, very good ideas. I think that deep down people have some altruistic motives for getting involved in politics. But what happens is, like it or not, you get thrown into this big flow of events and all of a sudden you lose perspective. And that's what happens. It all of a sudden consumes you. It takes over. And it's very difficult to fight that flow, to fight against it. We talked about it a few weeks ago when we did that show about Ho-Sunk. Remember that? It's that flow. It's that flow of energy that's going down there. And you need to be able to be strong enough to fight against it. And it's difficult. I'll tell you personally, it's very, very difficult because the flow is there. But it does happen. And when it does happen, you need to be able to stand off from it for a few minutes and really admire these people. And we had an incident yesterday where we were able to express our admiration and our love for a very special person. I'm talking about my father-in-law, who was named as Father of the Year at his local parish, which is the St. Peter Parish in Van Nuys, California. And what was really beautiful about this was here is a person who's dedicated his life to the church. And you know what? Just a beautiful story. I'm going to find a way of making sure that it's in our show notes today. Do read it, okay? It's a story about post-genocide. His parents were genocide survivors, having come here, and he starts brand new. Being born here in America, how do you start? You know, this is, to me, is always the God generation. I've spoken about this in the past. These are people who had nothing and create something. Isn't that what God does? He has nothing and he creates something. And so, too, you see that he had done this. His name is Sarkis, and he created what? A life. And that life is defined by his family, his friends, the goodness. And it all revolves around the central idea of the church. The church as being the building block, the foundation, where Christ is at the center. And when you find people like this that go outside of the mold, you need to be able to not only acknowledge them, but you need to celebrate them. And that's why I'm sharing this with you. It's not just a personal pride, and although we do have it in our family, a big, big personal pride that we have a father like this, but it's also a point of inspiration that I'm throwing it out to you today, because we need to be inspired by people like this. And so here is a person who sees the value of the church and understands the importance of Christ in the center of that church. And we see this throughout his life. My father-in-law is somebody who received a contract during his life to go out to Texas, to a small place called El Paso, right on the rim of Texas, bordering New Mexico. And there, him and his wife, my mother-in-law, they were out there without anybody. No Armenians over there. And what do? They go and they pick a phone book and they find the names that end in IAN. And they grab together a small group of people and they bring them together for what? For a community worship. And he would say, we'd get together. He'd say, we'd say the Haimed, the Lord's Prayer, and then we'd offer a hymn. And then we would have fellowship. And tell me about it. Isn't that what church is about? Why are we complicating it more than that? Isn't that what it should be? About a prayer and fellowship. Yeah, we have all kinds of layers to them, and we talk about sacramental life, but really the main focus of church is expressed in that, is in the prayer and the fellowship. And they did this with very simple means. Then he comes back, and here in the Van Nuys area, the largest church in the LA area is the St. Peter's, and he receives a calling. And this is a God-given calling to come and take over the Sunday school. And so countless generations, countless young people have gone through that Sunday school system where he and his wife have been the superintendents, have led the direction for Christian education, laying the seeds. And so yesterday, in a beautiful gesture, the church acknowledged him as Father of the Year. They gave him this small little gathering, which was probably accented with the greatest gift of all, that his family was there. Something like close to 20 grandchildren, ours included, were there. All six children, all spouses, and sitting there and acknowledging and saying that here is a life that has touched so many people. Now, we need to be able to do that because, you know what? We always look at the scandalous lives. We always look at the difficult lives because they are more sensational. And, you know, I've shared with this with you in the past. Listen to the news every single day and you will hear about the one accident that stops the traffic. So they never tell you that 10 million people in a particular city got home okay. But they will tell you that the one car skidded off the road and did not make it home okay. Because news is about negative, about bad things that happen in our world. They will tell you about the one person who got shot. They won't tell you that there's 20 million people in that same area that did not get shot, because that's not news. And so can we switch news around to some positive things? I'm sharing with you this beautiful positive story about a man who lives his life, who gives his life unconditionally for the purpose of others, selflessly, to be able to help others and especially help youth. New generations come to know Christ, come to know God, come to understand themselves within the bigger picture of life. And that to me is something that we need to be able to applaud. We need to be able to share in. And so what I'm going to do is I'll make sure that this gets out on the net. Do read his story, beautiful story. And I'm just very thankful that the St. Peter Church out there was able to acknowledge this I'll use the word, a giant of a person who has, because a giant really touches many, many, many lives. And here's a person who touched many lives through his lives, and he continues to do so. So we wish him a lot of health and goodness, along with his wife, beautiful Osniv, my mother-in-law, which you don't hear too many people say beautiful things about mother-in-laws, but I have a beautiful one. So anyway, that's a small little personal story that's important to share on a global network because it's the stuff that inspires all of us. Now, you know that I'm not going to leave it there. Yeah, it's more than just applauding my father-in-law today. I want to talk about why this is important, especially for us. Because for how many months now, especially this past year, right, we've been talking about new metaphors, about combating fire with water, not with fire, right? And we talk about politicians who have this basic dialogue with you. And, you know, we're mightier than you are. We will wipe you out and so on, right? And I've been calling on alternatives. Well, when we find the alternatives, you need to latch onto it. Think about this for a moment, okay? Why are politicians in the game? Well, they start off with altruistic reasons, but they get caught up because all of a sudden their egos get bigger than the purpose that they've served. What happens naturally in a church environment, when you serve in a church, you have to put your ego on hold. The problems we get into is when our egos get too big. Put your ego on hold. And you serve someone else. You serve something greater than yourself. So naturally, you are in a state of check. And what happens is that these people become the true inspirations because their motives are not about filling up their pockets and filling up their ego chests, but about filling and helping out others. So you find a purity in their motives. You find a purity in their actions. And that's what we need to be mimicking. So in response, a lot of times people say, you're too critical of the politicians. Yes, I am, because there are certain drawbacks within the political life. But when you get involved in a church and you do it right, in this story that I just told you, shared with you about Sarkis. And so when you do it right, when you give of yourself, put yourself on hold, put it in check. As Jesus says, he who loves his life will lose it, but he who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. As Jesus says, if you're going to follow me, you must pick up your cross and follow me. And so we understand that there is a selflessness that is required of us. Why? Because when the self is on hold, or at least, at the very least, is in check, you start understanding that you have a purpose for your life. And that purpose is not self-serving. It is in the service of others. And when you start serving others, what happens? As you get into the God mold. Because where are God's hands? Where are God's feet? Where is God's mouth? We become the agents of peace in this world. We become the vehicles by which God's love is spread through the world. And this is why St. Paul says so beautifully, he says, the body of Christ, the church is the body of Christ. It's within that church that Christ, the head, gives the direction for the body to do its work. So the head sends out a signal, hey, hands, get out there and feed the homeless. Hey, feet, get out there and walk an extra mile for justice. Hey, mouth, get out there and talk about the injustices that are happening in the world and how people need to be responsive to that, and so on and so on. I mean, this is the metaphor of the body of the Christ, of Christ, namely the church. And so our service in the church has to be selfless. And when we put the self in there, when we get the ego involved in there, as we've all done that, we mess up. And so it's very important to keep that in check. Keep this in mind. And when I find examples such as my father-in-law, when I find examples like him and what his wife, my mother-in-law, did throughout their life and continue to do, these are ones that I want to bring at least to forum over here for you to understand that there are just some beautiful people in the world that are worth our admiration, but even more worth our mimicking. To look at their lives and say that, look, if they could do it, I can do it too. I need to use them as examples. So God bless them. God bless all of you. Here's Susie to tell you about what's going on at Epostle and in his shoes.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, we are hitting our 9th year of podcasting. Actually, this is the last show of our 8th year. Can you believe it? Yeah, we're already there. The last show. Next week, we start in a 9th year of podcasting The Next Step. And we're going to talk about different means and different ways that we're going to be taking this podcast and our ministry forward. In fact, last night we had a very productive meeting where we talked and we actually did some initial recordings, which we'll be processing and getting ready for next week's anniversary. I guess it's the 8th anniversary, right? We celebrate. It'll be 8 years. It'll be happy birthday to me, number 8. But we start our 9th year. Yeah, I know. You do this in Armenia all the time, right? How old are you? I'm in my 9th year. How old are you? I'm 8 years old. But I'm in my 9th year. Okay. Anyway, we will start our 9th year next Thursday. So we've been talking a little bit about this, and I want to share with you a podcast that I heard a couple days ago. It is Penn Jillette. Are you familiar with that name? He is a magician of Penn and Teller fame. And he was talking, you may not know it, but he is also a very articulate individual who's able to express himself using words and talking about matters of faith from the atheist perspective. He claims himself an atheist, and he will argue about it. But here's what he said the other day, and I, I, I want to say it was on a podcast. It may have been on the radio. I can't remember. But he said something to the effect that we as atheists will become the majority soon. There are more people converting to atheism. In other words, more people that are rejecting traditional religion and adopting atheism as a way of life. And he says, what's important for us is that we don't become like the Christian community that has been non-tolerant of us. In other words, we need to be tolerant of everyone, even those people who have specific beliefs, Christian beliefs, Muslim beliefs, Jewish beliefs, whatever their beliefs may be. We need to be able to accept them and be tolerant of them, even when at the point that we become the majority. I don't want to just throw that out at you. I thought it was a very mature way of looking at it. It probably defines religion in the 21st century, that kind of understanding. Definitely religion in 2016, where we're at today. This idea of tolerance and to be able to really talk about atheism as part of the mix. You know, not just out there, but it's not just part of the mix. Slowly it's going to become, and it is becoming. It is, actually. I shouldn't even say it is becoming. In practicality, right? Whether you want to admit it or not, atheism is really a majority view of people, right? That's where we're at. So I would love to hear from you, because this is an interesting little segue into our ninth year. Where we go for our ninth year? How do we deal with a world that is dealing with atheism? Who are we when we talk about Christianity? You know where I come from. When I talk about Christianity, it's not about just getting out there and blowing our horns for Jesus. It's about making that world of Jesus real in our lives right now. And so we need to talk about injustice, we need to talk about poverty, we need to talk about violence, we need to talk about war, we need to talk about genocide, we need to talk about insincerity as all evils that are out there, ones that need to be combated with the power that we have, basically the love that God places into our heart. So how do we do that? How do we go about doing that? Through the past 8 years, we've given you specific stories, metaphors, opportunities where we've been able to express that. Where do we go in our ninth year? We'll look forward to it next week. And with that, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Listen to what Susie says. We do need your support. You know, it's all possible with your donations, with your prayers, with your constant giving to us and our constant giving back to you. And I hope that that's a good mix. I hope there's a yin to our yang and our yang to our ying. And we are all working together in concert to get this message out. Well, you know where I'm going. I want to thank you for joining us today and remind you that we are all over the net. You could find us on Facebook. You could find us at the mothership inhisshoes.org as well as epostle.net. Epostle, an easy name to remember. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. That's epostle with an E, right? Epostle.net. Hey, listen, for the wonderful crew who put today's show together, I hope you enjoyed it. For Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your broadcast out.